Accession number 10180, Reel 1.
John Hatfield, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Hatfield?
Yes, I was born on the 24th of June 1922 in Madrid, the capital of Spain. The reason for that was that my father, who was British, worked for a British bank, which in those days specialised in work with Spain and South America. And he served most of his career in Spain. My mother was originally Spanish, although she was born in England. And the reason that that she seemed to revert to her own country was a pure coincidence. My father was sent to Spain, and she came out with him.
You lived in Madrid throughout this period,
yes,
did you?
Yes, I lived in Madrid from the time I was born until soon after the Civil War broke out in 1936.
What sort of house were you in?
A flat. Well, originally, I was born actually in a very big house that belonged to my grandfather, my Spanish grandfather, who gave it to my parents when they came out to England, when they came out from England. Soon after I was born, when I was about two, my parents moved to a flat, and we lived in a succession of flats because it was more central.
So you lived in right in the middle of Madrid?
Yes, right in the middle, yes.
Were they comfortable flats?
Yes. In fact, when I came to England later, I thought Spain was a more comfortable country than England because we had central heating and a janitor and a maid servant and so on. They were quite comfortable.
You just had the one servant?
Yes, just one. That was normal in those days in sort of middle-class families.
How did you get on in these early years with the Spanish community?
Well, very well, because, of course, being born and brought up in that community, it seemed to me perfectly normal to be among them. So nearly all the children that I played with, for instance, before I went to school were Spanish. We just knew a few English families quite well, and some not very well. My parents' friends were partly British and partly Spanish, and they mixed in very well. In fact, we didn't have much to do with the official British people, like the consul and the embassy people. My parents, for some reason, never liked them very much and tended to mix more with the Spanish community.
Do you know why they didn't like them very much?
They thought they were stuffy and narrow-mindedly British. And also, my mother particularly was very friendly with the woman who owned our last block of flats, the one we lived in most of the time, who was a famous singer and dancer, Spanish dancer, who trained a lot of the present Spanish dancers that are seen nowadays. She invented the idea of a Spanish folk ballet. So through that, they mixed a lot with the Spanish literary and artistic group.
Before you went to school, what was your first language?
English. English and Spanish, both together, but English was the language at home. And although my mother was originally Spanish, she was very English in her tastes, and she ran the home as an English home, basically. A mixture of English and Spanish food, English ideas about bringing up children, and so on. And so basically we were English at home and mixed with the Spanish people outside the home.
Was there any difficulty in teaching you English, because everyone else outside spoke
French? I don't think so. No, some of the children we knew who had a similar mixed parentage, although in their case the mother was actually more really Spanish because she had stayed in Spain, they had difficulty. They used to speak English with a Spanish accent, and we used to rather sort of think that was a pity. But no, I don't remember any difficulty. I think we just took it for granted.
What about your education?
I went to the French school in Madrid, the French Lycée, which is similar to the one in London, which took children from primary right through to secondary school.
What year did you go there?
1928.
Could you describe the sort of syllabus you were taught at this school?
At the beginning, we started straight into things like learning to read, arithmetic, writing. In those days, there wasn't any of this sort of spending your time when you were small, drawing pictures and so on. We went right into academic work right away, although, of course, it was mixed up with songs and entertainment games. The teachers were very good. And then after that, we gradually went through the stages of a planned French-type curriculum until at the age of 12 we shifted to the secondary part of the school, but it was still the same school.
You say you learned to read. Which language did they teach you?
I learned to read in Spanish, because most of the children there were Spanish, and actually it's easier to learn to read in Spanish than most languages because it's completely phonetic. So I can remember very clearly, we learned to read in Spanish, then gradually we were converted to reading in French as well. And I taught myself to read in English at home, with my parents' help, by looking at all the books I had. I already knew letters and knew how to spell my name and things like that. And I applied a sort of logic that if it's phonetic in Spanish, it isn't quite phonetic in English.
Well, what, you say you went on then to the sort of grammar school side.
Yes.
What subjects did you take?
Well, there we covered on a regular basis. French, grammar and appreciation of literature, Spanish, the same, English, taught as a foreign language, arithmetic, geometry and algebra, geography, history, French history mainly, and one science in each class. One year we did botany, another year we did zoology, and so on. And we had gymnastics and no official games. We didn't have organised games at all.
What was the basic daily routine by the time you got into the secondary side?
Well, we would just start with one lesson first thing in the morning and have an hour at each lesson. So you might say, for instance, start off with French, the next hour might be arithmetic, the next hour might be geography, and so on. As far as I remember, we worked from 8:30 to 12 or 12:30, then we went home for lunch, normally, or the sun stayed, and then we worked again from 2 to 4:30, something like that, including Saturday mornings. And in the secondary part, we had Thursdays off completely to do homework. You were supposed to do a day's homework on Thursday.
Now, during this period, as you were growing up in Spain, as you became towards 14, had you any idea of the political background?
Oh, yes.
What was going on?
Right back, as far as I can remember, politics was a very important part of daily life, not only because people talked about it much more than they do in Britain, but because things were happening. For instance, we often used to have to go to school through a strike or with riots going on and things like that, so that politics was always present.
And what you say, through a strike, how would that affect you?
Well,
which strikes?
We used to walk to school, so it was more a question of the atmosphere. If there was a strike of, building workers, there might be a fear of demonstrations and the police charging the unionist demonstrators, things of that type. But my parents were very sensible and used to take the line that this was normal, and until something got really bad, we just ignored. Well, we just went on with life through it.
You mentioned riots. Were they common?
At certain times. For instance, in 1931, the municipal elections were massively won by pro-Republican groups, and the king abdicated as a result because he didn't want bloodshed. So overnight, almost to everyone's surprise, a republic was proclaimed. Now, at that time, there was a certain amount of not very serious rioting, but a lot of the Republican leaders just before that were arrested and tried in a mass trial in the law courts, which were exactly opposite my school. So there were great crowds and police and things of that sort going on, which made life very exciting. There were riots. My father sometimes used to have to come back from his bank with his arms in the air while the police sort of shepherded the crowds and this kind of thing. And later on, I remember seeing, for instance, the first burning of the churches in, I think it was 1933.
I'll come to that, the actual start. What about your own development? You were in a peculiar position for a young English lad. I believe you had a particular interest in sort of adventure books and naval history. Could you talk about that a bit?
Yes, well, obviously, being what would nowadays be called an expatriate, I was more interested than normal, perhaps, in English history, English patriotic things, and so on. And I used to read a lot of boys' adventure stories. A lot of them belonged to some friends I mentioned who lived in the same block of flats, who were British, which were very old-fashioned books, sort of G.H. Henty type. And I devoured these, thinking that that was the normal way English people lived, very patriotic, very adventurous, and so on. Also, I had a subscription to a boys' magazine called The Modern Boy, which was rather superior to the ordinary ones in that it had very serious-type stories, and which I thought was fascinating. In fact, I won a subscription to it by something. I think I entered a competition or something. And so I did swallow an awful lot of rather out-of-date, at that time, English ideas. I read a lot of books. I read some Dickens when I was quite young, that sort of thing, because I used to read my parents' books.
So you'd say that this gave you an unrealistic view of England as it was then in the late 20s, early 30s?
Yeah, in a way it was realistic, because I got a lot of information about contemporary life from my parents' English magazines, adult magazines, and their conversation. But in a way it was unrealistic, because I romanticised English life, and I didn't realise the extent to which life in England was in those days quite backward.
Were you a member of any boys' clubs or the Scouts, for instance?
No. I wanted to be, but for some reason my parents didn't want me to. They thought it was unnecessary and a nuisance, and I didn't join any clubs, no.
Now, as your education progressed, you only got to be 14 before you left, but I mean, while you were in Spain, what did you think your career, before the war broke out, what did you think your career would be leading towards? What were you interested in doing at that early age?
Well, I had rather romantic ideas. I wanted to be either in the Navy, the British, the Royal Navy, or the Foreign Office, which I thought was logical since I knew languages and had lived abroad. And again, that I romanticised, because I realise now it isn't always an advantage. And that's about it. I had a lot of other silly ideas, like be a film star or something when I was quite young. But to join the Navy, you had to join, if you wanted to be an officer, at 13. And I was too young then. My parents decided that it would be too much of a shock. Plus, they couldn't afford it. So I didn't. So I just carried on in imagining that round about the age of 14, I would go to an English school and take English exams and go to an English university if I could, and go on from there and see what happened.
Could you take me now through the developments in the Spanish Civil War situation?
Right.
As the major events happened, and how you reacted to
right.
what happened?
Well, I mentioned the Republic in 31, and you know probably that a few years later, in 34, there was a right-wing government under the Republic who tried to undo a lot of what the sort of liberal Republicans had been trying to do in terms of land reform and so on.
Which side were your family supporting of these two?
It was a bit
factions?
Complicated. My father had been, on the whole, on the left. He very strongly thought that there ought to be reforms, etc. And in fact, once he told us he was a socialist, which in those days sounded rather drastic. But he didn't take an active part in politics. My mother and grandmother, the Spanish side of the family, tended to be on the side of a rather sort of idealised right wing, what you might call in English terms a sort of one nation Tories, that type of person, who were in favour of improving things, but thought that the left wing was run by a bunch of talkers who didn't know what they were doing, and who were, or by a bunch of extremists. So on the whole, there was a kind of right-wing flavour, but a strong desire to improve things.
So how did the family react to the first Republican government?
Well, the first Republican government I think my parents thought it was probably a good idea, and I thought it was exciting because it was something very new. Then when the right-wing government came in, that led to the rebellion of the miners in the north of Spain, which was repressed very brutally. But of course at the time it wasn't clear whether in fact the government was repressing it or whether the miners were being brutal, because both stories circulated. So that led to an unpleasant atmosphere and feeling of chaos and trouble. And in 1936 there was a famous general election which was won by the Popular Front, which was a new thing set up by the left-wing groups and the communists, which the Communist Party was very small, but the fact that the Popular Front won frightened a lot of people. And soon after, after a lot of rumours and a period in which a lot of people got killed and kidnapped and so on both sides, the army rebelled, which was a fairly traditional thing to do in Spain, and that's what started the Civil War.
And how did your family react to this this period?
That period, the last period. As far as I remember, before it happened, when it was about to happen, the feeling was something drastic was going to take place and nobody quite knew what. And I think probably a lot of my family felt that if the army could rise and impose order and a sensible sort of compromise could be worked out, that might be the best solution. On the other hand, once it did happen and the Republic, which was a left-wing republic again, resisted and the whole thing didn't collapse in a few days as people had thought, then it got rather complicated in everybody's minds. At the beginning, I think most of my family were in favour of the rebellion by the stage it had reached. On the other hand, I was too, because of course I saw it all in terms of sort of heroic crusaders versus stupid and brutal mob sort of thing at the beginning. But on the other hand, I can remember very clearly that I was very excited by the way that the people took over in the Republican-held areas, which included Madrid, where I lived. Patrols of workers, men and women, suddenly emerged and started taking over from the police. And all that was exciting. But of course, it is true that at that stage, a lot of people got shot by the workers just for being right-wing or rich. And there was a man who lived opposite us who was a marquis, and one night there was a lot of movement and we heard shots, and the story was he'd got killed. And my father, who lived near the sort of Scotland Yard of Madrid, used to see quite a lot of dead bodies and pictures of dead bodies there, people who'd been shot and had been collected up. So there was a lot of unpleasantness going on, which tended to make people want the army to hurry up and win and impose order. But at the same time, as I say, there was this contradictory feeling that it was wrong to rise against the government, and that the workers and the unionists and so on were being given a chance. For instance, the militia was formed, which was really just the armed workers who used to wear blue overalls. And everyone seemed to admire them. They were very brave. They rushed up to try and defend the passes into Madrid over the mountains. A lot of them got killed. There was a feeling of sort of spontaneous heroism around, which most people that I knew admired at the same time.
It sounds like you were very confused at the time.
Yes, we were really. Although my own predominant feeling, I remember when we got to England later, was that the Franco side, which it had become by then, was right, and that the sort of sympathisers of the Republic in England didn't know what they were doing, that they were being hoodwinked and that they were being liberal and in a bad sense, didn't realise the realities of the situation.
When you were in Spain, before you left for England, had fascism become an issue? Was Franco seen as a fascist in alliance with the other fascists?
He was in the anti-Franco propaganda of the government, but the thing is, you see, that both the Communist Party and the Fascist Party in Spain were absolutely minute until the Civil War started. And although the Falange, which was the Fascist Party, was beginning to be known of before the rising, very few people belonged to it, and not many people sympathised with it, not even Franco, in fact.
So you very much saw it as the army rather than the fascists.
Yes, that's right. We saw it as the army. But, of course, that was one of the complications. Once it started and the Franco people began to be called fascists and it was known that the Falangists had sort of emerged and become important on his side, then, of course, it began to look nastier. And that was one of the things that caused one to think about it. By that, because Franco did largely succeed through help from Germany and Italy, and that was known very early on.
Now, you were in this in Madrid. Were you frightened at all while these things were going yourself, I mean?
To be honest, I don't remember being frightened very much. I remember being excited more than anything. Sometimes it was a bit frightening. But, for example, the man who lived in the flat opposite on the same floor was an army officer who stayed loyal to the Republic. But he was obviously a bit doubtful about it, and the stories were that he wasn't quite sure where his duty lay, sort of thing. And he used to be called on by some of these militiamen who used to bring messages backwards and forwards. And I remember thinking, supposing they attack us, quite illogical, there's no reason why they should. So I armed myself with a broomstick and I was ready to repel them if they burst through the door. But I wasn't really frightened, I thought it was exciting. My father and I used to walk through the streets and see what was going on. I remember seeing lorry loads of rifles outside the trade union club headquarters, handing out rifles to the workers, which I thought was a good thing, and it sort of, at that stage it seemed a good idea, and very exciting.
How did it fit in with the image of life you got from the Henty books and the sort of that romanticised view of war and
that's
rebellion?
Right. Well, it was partly that, I suppose, that helped to strengthen the idea of the well-meaning honourable army officers trying to prevent chaos. But on the other hand, it also fitted in with the idea of the young unknown workers taking arms to defend their interests. Is it the two things kind of contradicted each other?
Now, how did it affect your education as you went into 36, into that last summer?
Very much. You see, the Civil War broke out in July after the school had closed. The school closed for the summer in June. The Republic interfered a bit more because there was an incident or two when, for example, an army, an Air Force officer, in just about the time the Republic was proclaimed, flew over Madrid dropping pro-Republican leaflets and threatened to bomb certain parts if the king didn't resign. Now, he happened to be Franco's brother, actually, because Franco's brother was a famous airman, a sort of pioneer who crossed the Atlantic, and he was a Republican. That's one of his brothers. Now, I remember that caused a bit of chaos. The children were frightened because we could hear guns firing, anti-aircraft guns. And our teacher calmed us down by drawing an enormous racing car on the blackboard. I just remember that.
Now, what plan... Your family left Spain in that summer. Do you think... Why did they leave that summer?
Well, the real reason was that they thought the time had come for my brother, who was younger, and myself to go to an English school. Because for some time they'd been worried that I was going to arrive in England later with a continental education which didn't fit in with the English exam system, and that I'd therefore find it hard to get on. So they felt it was their duty to put us to school in England, and they were going to do that summer anyway.
So the war didn't make any difference?
Well, it made a difference because it delayed our departure, because foreigners were not allowed to leave Madrid until the government had decided that it was all right. So we had to wait for, I've forgotten, 6 weeks or something like that, until the government organized a special train, which was a sort of refugee train, for foreigners to leave the country.
Before we come, I should perhaps have mentioned, asked a little more detail before. Could you give us a little more about the flavour of Madrid? Because so many major things were happening. Do you think you could take us through the stages?
During the Civil War?
Detail? Yes. And before, if there's anything.
Yes. Well, this goes back to history. Spain, of course, was a pre-industrial country, even at that stage. It was very little industrialized, except in the north and the northeast. And therefore, life in a way was quieter and more peaceful for people who had money, but much more difficult for people who didn't, particularly the poor peasants in the south, who were landless peasants, depending on occasional labor from huge landowners. The result is that for a long time, since the Napoleonic War, there had been two groups in Spain, the ones who wanted to become more modern and therefore industrial and therefore capitalist, or liberal capitalists, who were called liberals, not meaning liberal party, but liberals in that sense, and the other side, who represented the old values, who didn't really want to industrialize, who were backed by the big landowners, by the church, in a sense, a lot of people who were believed in the church, who were against secularism. And of course, gradually, the unions, as they began to develop, with a small amount of industry developing. But the thing wasn't cut and dried in English, in the British sense, because you could argue now that the anti-liberal, anti-progress people were right, because they were against capitalism, in a sense, without knowing it. And you could also argue that the other side, who were in favor of progress and industry, etc., were ignoring a lot of the realities of Spain by being too theoretical and too dominated by French and European thinking, which developed in a much more advanced country than theirs. So when the Republic came in, the leaders of it, who were mostly university professors, journalists, lawyers, people like that, didn't take the right measures to solve the real problems of the countryside. The laws they passed to redistribute land didn't work, and more or less were a dead letter. Their attempts to reform the army so that it wouldn't be so big and so powerful just annoyed the army instead of achieving what they wanted, and so on. They were not very effective. The result is that the people in the middle, who were not very committed but tended to be conservative with a small c in their thinking, thought that the left wing were both incompetent and dangerous. And of course, there was a kind of irrational fear of communism too, everywhere, not just in Spain. The Spanish Communist Party, as I said before, was almost non-existent in fact, but it made a lot of noise as time went on. There was a man called Primo de Rivera, who was the son of a previous dictator, who invented he and others invented the fascist party, the Falange. He, in fact, now, in retrospect, seems a fairly well-meaning sort of chap, rather deluded, thinking that you could have a form of socialism that wasn't left-wing, a sort of respectable socialism. And, in fact, he wasn't liked by a lot of the right-wing at all. So that, again, was a small party, but the existence of it attracted rather hot-headed, thuggish kind of young middle-class men who provoked armed fights with armed workers in the sort of late middle and late 30s, before the Civil War.